This is an extended edition of the A-Noise Daily Roundup. A-Noise is the web stream covering the protests around the Republican National Convention in New York City. I'm Kat Aaron with Rise Up Radio from the New York Indie Media Convergence Space. Over 1,000 people remained in jail Wednesday following Tuesday's protests around the Republican National Convention. We hear from Central Booking. Despite the mass arrests, demonstrations continued with actions throughout the city. We bring you updates from the streets. And we hear from Iraq Veterans Against War protesting at Ground Zero. But first, a summary of Wednesday's events. Hundreds gathered Wednesday at Pier 57 in New York to protest the detention conditions there. Over 1,000 protesters have been held at the pier after their arrests during the demonstrations around the RNC this week. Arrested protesters are pinned into chain-link cages topped with razor wire, giving the pier the nickname Guantanamo on the Hudson. The cells have oil residue covering the floors, and the building is thought to have asbestos. With many being held over 24 hours, protesters have no choice but to sleep on the oily floor, leading many to have problems breathing. Tiana Kennedy spoke with Wajid, recently released from the pier, about conditions there.
The conditions there, just to emphasize, you know, are real toxic. That kind of industrial waste is not something to be played around with. You know, it's clear that petroleum products and the
asbestos.
Improper disposal of them plus asbestos contamination is something that put all of us at a risk. Then the rashes and everything, it was clear that there are some serious health issues involved with that place. The one thing that really concerned me that I heard about was there was an 8-week pregnant woman in there, and she was in there kind of overlapping with the end of our stay, and she was kept in there for 12 hours without access to food or water. You know, stuff like that is criminal. Obviously, everything they're doing is criminal, but that's like vicious, cruel criminality, because that period of pregnancy is like a very vulnerable point for the developing child, and lack of food plus exposure to all those toxic chemicals, that could have an impact for decades. We got to shut that place down.
Wajid also called for protesters arrested while biking to get together and organize.
The word is out on the street at the jail solidarity gatherings that anyone was involved in arrest because they were on their bikes or near their bikes or had been biking or were near anyone who was biking should organize and get together. www.times-up.org is the place to check in and stay in touch, because we need to form a network right now.
Protesters later moved to Center Street in front of Central Booking, where over 100 people chanted outside saying, "Let them all go." According to reports from the scene, protesters on the inside responded, chanting 24 hours, no lawyers. Tariq Karula spoke with Jenka from the IMC, live at the scene.
I'm here outside of the jail solidarity at the courthouse at 100 Center Street, and there are about 100 people out here. People have been chanting, and the judge just came down with the ruling that people who have been given a violation have to be out by 1 o'clock in the morning. People who have a misdemeanor have to be out by 9 a.m. It's not clear who's on which list, having violations or having misdemeanors.
What about the writ of habeas corpus? Did he make a ruling about their rights?
That's the ruling. I guess it's an extension of the 24 hours to until 1 a.m. and 9 a.m. for some, which is a violation of habeas corpus and can be appealed in the class action suits that are sure to come.
Wednesday evening, police began the massive release of detained demonstrators. James from the Mar Vista Peace and Justice Affinity Group reported live to A-Noise from the 10 Center Street Detention Center. He describes the protesters being released.
So these are people that have been arraigned, or they are part of the people that were held for more than 24 hours without anybody knowing where the hell they were.
While the release represented a major development in the historic RNC protest, media coverage was conspicuously absent.
You know, if there's anybody with video, there are people. I see video cameras, but I don't know how we get to that. But there's some wonderful stuff. And there's no major media down here, but this is just beautiful.
That's atrocious.
I mean, this is where the camera should be. This is the core of the movement.
Earlier on Wednesday, nearly 8,000 people formed a symbolic unemployment line through the heart of New York City. The line drew the nation's attention to failed economic policies that have left 8.2 million Americans unemployed. Organized by People for the American Way, the Imagine Festival, and the New York State AFL, the unemployment line stretched from Wall Street to Madison Square Garden. from precisely 8:13 a.m. to 8:31 a.m., thousands of pink slip waving participants created a single silent line along Broadway. The unemployment line puts a human face on the worst jobs economy since the Great Depression, with each participant representing over 1,000 unemployed Americans. The 8.1 million Americans currently looking for work could stand shoulder to shoulder and form a line from Crawford, Texas, all the way to the White House and back.
Wednesday afternoon, Axis of Eve gathered for Operation Expose and Depose. Dozens of women performed a mass flash of protest panties, creating a media spectacle to lay bare the shameful tactics of the Bush administration.
With WBAI for the Independent Media Stream. I'm here today covering the panty protest in Battery Park. Everywhere you look, there are women who have purchased Axis of Eve underwear with various anti-Bush slogans like Lick Bush and Cream Bush. About 15 minutes ago, they did a mass panty drop. So why don't you tell me why you came out here today?
I came out to expose my bush and to expose Bush.
Excellent. And why don't you tell me what your t-shirt reads first?
My t-shirt reads, "Lesbians love Bush, just not this one." And it's very true, honey.
And then how about the underwear?
The underwear is fire Bush, because it's so time. He's fired.
For the past few years, the mainstream media have marched in lockstep with the Bush administration. Wednesday evening, New Yorkers marched on the media. Organizers said, quote, media giants are granted licenses to broadcast on the public airwaves. In return, the public has a right to hold these companies accountable for their collective failure to present a wide range of viewpoint and perspectives. The march convened at 7 at CBS, moved to Time Life CNN Plaza, and proceeded south to the Fox studios. The march was a celebration as well as a protest. Organizers said, quote, "Our memory is our resistance, our word, and images are our weapons. We now record the history before us, and we reject the altered reality you construct. The day is coming when the people will stop paying attention to you. On that day, you will become irrelevant. You will cease to exist." Petri Dish of the Prometheus Radio Project spoke at the march.
People from all over America do not want these corporations to be more powerful. They do not want a corporation like General Electric, which makes billions of dollars off of the war in Iraq, to also be telling us what is going on in Iraq. So if you care about housing, you care about the concentration of ownership of media, and you care about the environment, you care about what is happening with the corporations taking over the media, what we need is a movement that looks closely at the media, that looks at who owns it, that looks at how they misrepresent, and looks at the way that we can change it through independent media, making sure that every town, every school, every environmental group, civil rights group, everybody that wants to create their own media has as much right to be on the airwaves as the Fox, the CNN, the CBSs of the world.
While the mainstream press has characterized protesters as violent anarchists, Martin Stoller, president of the New York City National Lawyers Guild, reports that only 20 demonstrators have been charged with felonies, many of whom were held on bogus charges.
From the first few days of demonstrations, there was only one case or one incident that involved felony charges against about 20 people who the police characterized as anarchists, but who, upon investigation, some of them have absolutely no connection with anything and were just swept up and charged with felonies and held on extremely high bail of $10,000 to $200,000.
Stoller speculates that protesters who participated in the direct actions of August 31st will only be charged with minor violations.
I expect that some of the people who are at the die-ins lying down on the street and the people arrested in the War Resisters League march that was on the sidewalk will be charged with disorderly conduct, which is not a crime. It's a violation. It's the legal equivalent of a traffic ticket for obstructing or allegedly obstructing vehicular or pedestrian traffic.
When asked what action must come next, Stoller had this to say.
Well, the next step for us to do is to ask the members of the media to find out why the police are criminalizing dissent.
Participants of August 31st protest have been detained for assaulting unidentified undercover officers in one of the most glaring acts of provocation. An unidentified police officer rode his motorcycle into a crowd of demonstrators, causing serious injury. Lawyer Daniel Alterman explains.
There was an individual riding a motorcycle without police insignia or a police uniform that was riding his bicycle through the crowd and hitting people. At some point in the process where they were trying to open up some distance between two groups of demonstrators, they tried to put barricades in the middle to separate, and they couldn't do that adequately. And this individual motorcyclist sped up and hit a woman in the back.
Alterman postulates that the officer acted with the intention of inciting the crowd.
Driving a motorcycle into a crowd of people, not only are you trying to create hysteria, but you're also potentially having the instrumentality to cause serious injury.
If this is the case, many question the legitimacy of police investigations into the incident.
If the individual police officer who was ramming into the crowd committed a conduct that either was criminal or a violation of his duties, then how can the police investigate their own?
Throughout the protests, police have arrested those acting in compliance with their orders. Alterman criticizes police for disregarding their agreements with demonstrators.
If the police are coming over to a demonstration that they said could use the sidewalk, which is their right, and walk two by two on the sidewalk, and getting them to an area and then throwing a net over them, and arresting legal observers who are there to prevent the very actions that just happened, then it seems to me a little bit over the top.
And that's the headlines from A Noise, truly independent rebel radio. Today at the A Noise studio in Lower Manhattan, Tariq Karula spoke with Roger Hill, a filmmaker who is making a documentary about this week's protests. Hill was arrested at Ground Zero Tuesday, but shortly before his arrest, he spoke with three members of Iraq Veterans Against the War.
Before I was arrested, I was able to get some really good interviews with a group called Iraq Veterans Against the War. Amazing group. A friend of mine, Mike Hoffman, he's at least the co-founder, maybe the founder. And these are some very, very courageous soldiers who are back from Iraq, saw the devastation, saw what's really happening, witnessed the carnage, and are brave enough to come forward and speak to that. And so that's what we're about to hear.
My name is Tim Goodrich. I went to Iraq as a civilian. I was lucky enough to get out right after the war started. And I felt like I had a debt to pay to the people, so I went to Iraq in January as a civilian.
What was that trip like?
It was amazing. Just the gross contradiction of what you see on TV versus the real story, what's happening.
What kind of stuff
do you see? Do you think there's reconstruction going on? There's not. I went to every corner of the city of Baghdad. Didn't see a single sign of reconstruction in the time I was there. Doctors washing their instruments in the polluted Tigris River because they have no clean water in their hospitals. Lack of medical equipment, lack of medical supplies. No books for the children in the schools. The children in the schools are more worried about the walls that are crumbling around them than being focused on what they should be focused on, which is learning.
Now, I've talked to a lot of, World War kind of protesters, and they rave about, the United States going over there, building schools, all this great stuff.
Well, one, I invite them to go over and see firsthand the truth. And two, I don't think all this resistance from the Iraqis would be coming if that was really the case.
Is there any way that this uprising can be put down, as they say, for military action?
No, because violence only begets more violence. So the best course of action for us right now is to pull out. The only difference between us pulling out now and 5 years from now is the number of dead American bodies that come home.
How do you feel when you kill
it makes me sick. These are my brothers and sisters. Us in the military, we joined to defend our country, and what we're doing over there is not defending our country. We were sold a lie by the administration, and a lot of us feel betrayed because of it.
Why did you join the military?
I joined the military because I've got a long family history of being in the military, and also I grew up in Buffalo. It's kind of a declining blue-collar town, just like a lot of cities in the nation, and I felt it was the best course of action.
What options, for the working class, for the poor, are there other
get educated. Go to school whatever way you can. Scholarships, grants. Work for school. It may be hard. I wish we had a socialist education system right here. And part of the reason we don't have socialized healthcare and socialized education is because it would detract from people going to the military. They would have no reason to go in the military because of that. But seriously, the best thing that people can do is become educated.
Tell me a personal story of someone you met when you were over there.
Yeah, one of the people we interviewed hundreds of Iraqis on the streets, but one interview comes to mind, said of Vivian Salamati, and during the initial push into Baghdad, she had a bomb drop near her house, so her husband, and the three young children hopped in the family car and decided to drive to a safer neighborhood. Well, all of a sudden they turned a corner, and U.S. troops were firing everywhere. They were spraying bullets everywhere. Nobody knows what happened. It could have been an IED that had gone off. It could have been a number of different things, resistance fighters, whatever it may be, but they turned a corner and their car was just riddled with bullets, and she's the only one that survived. And just having to see the pain on her face and crying, even a year later, telling her story of her family that had just been torn apart because of this, is something that's going to stick with me forever. And I wish everybody could hear stories like that and experience those stories firsthand, because it's just so powerful, so moving. It still makes my voice crack today.
What would you say to George Bush if you had a chance?
If I had a chance to say anything to George Bush, I'd tell him that I'm a member of Iraq Veterans Against the War. Basically, give him a shortened version of our mission statement, which can be found at www.ibaw.net. Tell him that we stand for bringing the troops home now and the killing on both sides. And then we also want support for our veterans that are coming back home.
What would you say to Kerry?
If I could say anything to Kerry, what I would say is that I really hope you remember your roots from the 1970s, your anti-war roots, and remember that. Keep that in mind.
Kerry's been talking about making the point that we need to send more troops into Iraq.
What I hope Kerry's doing is just saying that to win public opinion. But once he's in office, I hope he does a complete withdrawal of our troops.
Do you think the American people understand what's happening in Iraq?
Not at all. The American people are, and partly because of our media, we don't really understand other cultures. People need to travel more and see the world and become more educated that way. And once we understand people, education is a path to understanding, which is a path to peace.
What's going on in Najaf right now?
It's going on in Najaf. It's going on, the same thing that's going on in a lot of other cities around Iraq. Just needless bloodshed.
Is Iraq safer or better off under U.S. military occupation than they were under Saddam Hussein?
Well, if Iraq was safer now, they'd be happy with it and they wouldn't be fighting us back. There wouldn't be resistance.
What do you think we need to do to remedy this situation?
Immediate withdrawal of our troops is the best course of action right now. We already shot ourselves in the foot on this one, but we need to try to get as much international support so we have some validity in the reconstruction efforts.
Now, a lot of people on the right in the mainstream say that if we pull out now, it'll just be civil war and it'll be total chaos and it'll be a horrible situation.
If you understand the history of Iraq, the Iraqi people have been through so much turmoil in just the last 100 years that they can take care of themselves.
Who should be doing the reconstruction in Iraq?
The Iraqi people, absolutely. And that's part of the administration's fault right there. That's part of the reason we have this resistance. Iraq is a country with more than 60% unemployment, and we complain about 6% unemployment here. They have 10 times that. So people will do anything to make ends meet. Instead, our taxpayers are being built. We're paying $160,000 for a six-month tour for a truck driver over there, when an Iraqi could be paid $5,000 for the same amount of time. You're saving the taxpayers' dollars over here, and they'd be having employment over there, and they'd be happy. And also, a lack of knowledge of the systems. For example, the electrical grid over there is completely different from what you find over here. But the Iraqis are used to working with that. However, they're not being employed on the systems that they know. Instead, we've got these contractors coming from the U.S. being paid exorbitant amounts of money to fix systems they don't know the first thing about.
Why do you think they want to go to Iraq?
A couple different reasons. First, we overstayed our welcome in Saudi Arabia, so we needed a new strategic military jumping off point in the Middle East. Iraq was prime for the picking. Second, oil. And third, because of our alliance with Israel. We've been friends with Israel for I don't know how many years now, but they're the only allies that we have over there. So we definitely need somebody that's going to support us in our quest to take over the Middle East.
Are we democratizing the Middle East?
They say we are, but if you go to Iraq and see some of the examples over there, Iraqis don't have any rights.
Now, they say that elections are coming in December. What would happen if the majority of the people voted for al-Sadr?
That won't even ever get to that point. The U.S. will make sure of that. The U.S. is intent on installing puppets.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell the American public?
Don't believe everything you see on TV. Support our veterans. The troops over there right now, they don't want to be there. The last thing they want to do is be killed for a lie. So support them when they come home. It's just the administration that we need to be speaking out about. We need to be speaking out about the people that sent us over there in the first place, based on a lie.
And how do you feel about Bush having his convention so close to September 11th in New York?
Personally, I think he's exploiting the situation. Last year, it was the Thanksgiving turkey and the landing on the aircraft carrier. Last week, he was exploiting the Iraqi soccer team in the Olympics. What's next?
What do you think we're in store for if he gets another term?
4 more years of hell. Continuance of Middle East domination and maybe eventually World War III and a draft.
Next is Rob Serra.
Okay.
Of the three, he had the longest tour of duty in Iraq and also a Marine.
Yeah, Rob Serra.
And you were in Iraq?
I was in Iraq. I was with the 1st Marine Regiment, first time 4th Marines. We crossed the border on March the 20th. And I was in Baghdad on April 9th, and I stayed in country until June of 2003, end of June.
What were you feeling when you went over there?
Some apprehension, but, you know, at that point we were told we were going for good reasons. Saddam Hussein needed to be taken down, you know, weapons of mass destruction, they were terrorists, they were harboring terrorists, you know, Iraq was a threat to the United States. I believed every word of it going in. Once we got in there and we started fighting, and we were fighting the Fedayeen and fighting foreign fighters, and, you know, a lot of civilians were being killed, I really had a change of heart and decided that, you know, we're not here for the right reasons. It really hit hard when I came home from the war and my friends were still over there, and I started watching the news and seeing exactly what was going on, and that, you know, the insurgents were starting to rise and there were no weapons of mass destruction, and, you know, Iraq was not an imminent threat to us because we were there, we were in Baghdad in 3 weeks. So that's what turned it for me. I felt lied to. I felt cheated. You know, we were sent overseas to a foreign country to fight, and for reasons that were just on a whim. It was like there was a bet or something, and, you know, and we lost. We were the pawns.
How's that make you?
Used. Angry. But the best thing I can do now is support my friends that are over there, support every member of the armed services, and let them know that, you know, we want you guys home, and that's why we're doing this. That's what's great about Iraq Veterans Against the War. You know, we're vets. We were there. You know, if I'm not a patriot, you're out of your mind. I've fought for this country, and I support the troops 110% because a lot of them are my friends, and I've been in their shoes. And if you haven't been in their shoes, you know, you don't know what they're going through. I know what they're going through. We're here to end the fighting in Iraq. No more Americans. We don't want any more Americans killed. We don't want any more Iraqis killed. And we want to bring our friends home right now. And we want to make sure that if there's another war, or when there is another war, we get sent there for the right reasons.
What kind of stuff did you see when you were there?
Saw a lot of bad stuff. Everyone there saw a lot of bad stuff. You know, I'm no exception. You know, I definitely don't want to be a sob story. We all saw it. A lot of dead civilians, just the carnage on the highway, going up through Anasriya and Al-Kut and up into Baghdad. You know, seeing Marines die, seeing Marines get wounded. It's just, war is a horrible, visceral thing that you can't really fathom unless you've been there. It's a harsh reality. At first, I was kind of in disbelief. It seemed like a movie to me. What makes it real is not just the sight, but the smells. You know, you smell burning bodies. You smell, you know, death, basically. And it's a smell that sticks with you, and it makes it all very real. I remember there was a portion of the highway we went up that some armored vehicles had gone up before us, tanks and light armored vehicles with 25-millimeter cannons and tow missiles. And they had hit a bunch of buses and cars, and there were bodies all over the place. And not just bodies, but body parts. I mean, I saw a hand in the middle of the road. I saw guys without legs. I saw people blown in half laying there. So it's not something I want to see again, and it's not something my friends should have to see. I got an email from one of my friends in Fallujah, and he told me they're really frustrated. They want to come home. They'll go into somewhere like Fallujah, they get all ramped up to go, and, you know, they'll be fired on every day, and they'll be in a defensive perimeter and taking all this fire, and they're shooting back, and then they get ready to go into the city, and as soon as they get ready to go in and the order's about to be given, they get pulled back and the Iraqis go in, or like in Najaf, this cleric came down and cleared it all up. Well, for them, and, you know, I can't really speak for them because I'm not there right now, But there they are, and they've got all these insurgents trapped in one area, and now they're letting them all go. So now you've got guys that have been pinned down by the American military for a couple of weeks, and they're angry and they want some revenge. And now that they're out and about, they're going to be able to do whatever they want, firing RPGs at Humvees again, and more young 19, 20-year-old kids are going to die for nothing.
What did you say to President Bush?
You lied to us. You did this for your own gain, and you got to bring my friends home and bring the troops home right now.
What did you tell me about depleted uranium?
About depleted uranium? I don't know much about it, to be completely honest. Just that I was asked if I was exposed to it. I know that depleted uranium shells were fired from our tanks and A-10 Thunderbolt aircraft into armored vehicles, and that they leave a residue that can mess you up pretty bad. But, you know, I haven't had any effects from it. As far as I was told, they weren't really using that many depleted uranium shells anymore. But I'm not a DU expert, so I can't really speak about that.
Do you think Donald Rumsfeld is suspected by the rank and file soldiers?
Once again, I can't talk for the rank and file. I don't respect him. I don't respect him at all. I think he's whispering in President Bush's ear, and, you know, he wants to see things done his way. And he's sneaky. That's how I feel about it.
Why do you think he wants to go out?
Gain, profit. If anywhere, we should have been in Afghanistan. If we had taken everybody that went into Iraq and went into Afghanistan, you know, this would have been a righteous war. But we went to the wrong country.
How do you feel about the Dick Cheney Halliburton connection?
I think Mr. Cheney was making money for himself. He was a businessman. You know, Halliburton has a job, you know, and money is to be made from war, unfortunately. And that's a byproduct of war. Someone's going to make money off of it. He's just making money off of it. Do I respect him for it? No. You know, but the guy chose to make money from it, and that's what he's doing. And, you know, Halliburton, hey, they've got a lot of the contracts over there, and, you know, the guy's making money.
What do you think we're in store for if Bush gets another term?
A war with Iran. Honestly.
How devastating do you think that would be?
Horrible. There's no point to that at all. If I was an Iranian right now, I would look and see that we have U.S. troops in Afghanistan and U.S. troops in Iraq, and we control the Persian Gulf. I mean, these guys are squeezed, you know, and they've got to be getting pretty damn nervous. When Condoleezza Rice starts talking about Iran before the war in Iraq is over, you know, it's ridiculous.
Iraq didn't have much of a military. Iran has a fairly strong military.
Yeah, fairly strong military, but I'll tell you something. The United States has the strongest military in the world through technology and everything else. And thank God we've got some of the best weapons, best technology, and the best young men and women using that technology and trying to use it the right way. You know, that we're in a position where we can defeat anyone we come up against. But what is the cost? That is the question. And is it right? You know, no war is good unless there's something righteous about it. If someone invaded the United States, yes, I could see us picking up weapons and going crazy. But, you know, going over to another country where they, you know, have kind of been dealing with their own problems for the past 20 years is beyond me at this point.
How do you feel about Bush having this convention in New York?
He's exploiting the entire city. I think that he thought that there was going to be a quick victory in Iraq. And what better place to have the convention than here in New York City, where it started, you know, with the falling of these towers and, you know, so many civilians being killed in one shot. And then we go over to Iraq and beat them over there. And then here we are. Hey, great, victorious, you know, reelect me. Everything will be fine. Didn't happen that way. You know, we got bogged down, and now President Bush has the blood of all the civilians that died on September 11th here, and he's got the blood of 1,000 Americans that have died over in Iraq, all on his hands.
Do you think the American public understands what's happening in Iraq?
I don't think they understand all of it, and it's a tough situation. I mean, I don't understand everything that's happening in Iraq right now because I'm not on the ground anymore. When I was on the ground, I would tell stories about what was going on here, you know, when I came home, and people were like, no way, you know, that wasn't in the news, or we didn't know that. And I'm sure a lot of that's happening right now. I mean, they think that, like my friends in Najaf, you know, everyone thinks, okay, they're, you know, under fire here and there, and, you know, there might be a big firefight one day and big firefight the next day, but right now, you're not hearing anything about Najaf. all of a sudden it's everyone's kind of forgetting about it. Okay, well, it's all over. Those guys are still taking fire over. They're still engaged. So we back here in the United States do not get the whole story. Sometimes it's good that we don't get the entire story because, you know, war is a visceral thing and the American public doesn't want to hear about it. But maybe it's about time they start hearing about it.
Were you in Baghdad when the statue fell?
Yes, I wasn't near it, though. I was up north in Sadr City, which was a Shiite slum across the canal. So I didn't see it fall.
Were the people in Sadr City celebrating?
We went into Sadr City. We had people throwing cartons of cigarettes at us. We walked into a hospital, and as we were walking back, I had a little girl come up and put a flower on my flak jacket. So they were real happy to see Saddam. You know, very, very happy to see Saddam leave. And we were their saviors. And now they're angry at us, understandably. I think if you or anyone else here were sitting on their block and going home every night, the police had it blocked off, and they accidentally shot your next-door neighbor who was trying to get back onto the street because they were nervous, and they were there day in, day out, and they come in and raid your house, you'd start to get angry after a while, too, and wonder what the hell they're doing.
And what would you like to tell the American public?
Support the troops. Vote President Bush out of office. Basically, in my mind, the main thing I want to get across is that it doesn't matter who is in office, all right? Bush, Kerry, Mickey Mouse, Marvin the Martian, whoever. The next time the United States goes to war, it better be for a damn good reason.
And that was Rob Serra, Iraq Veterans Against the War.
If you want more information on Iraq Veterans Against the War, you can check out their website. It's at www.ivaw.net. That's ivaw.net.
And finally tonight, a short report on the Anoy stream. We here have had many international callers this week, with listeners phoning in from Germany, the Netherlands, Serbia, and today from England. The caller from Birmingham celebrated the tremendous presence of local community groups at this week's protests.
Protests are kind of the tip of the iceberg. It's what enables us to show kind of a strong voice of opposition once in a while, and to hold the attention of people for, you know, some kind of spectacular event. But the real work, the real, you know, seeds of change are going to happen through the creation of grassroots alternatives on the ground, through the empowerment of local communities to organize themselves for social change.
You've been listening to the Anoy's Daily Roundup, covering the protests at the Republican National Convention. Today's roundup was produced by the very exhausted Tariq Karula, Kat Arendt, Christina Heatherton, and Lee Azzarello. Thanks to Leanne Stenke of Rise Up Radio, Andrew Geller of KBOO, and Jen Nedbalski of Paper Tiger. Tune in to anoy's.org all this week for breaking news from the streets. Keep it locked. Let's push things forward.